Welcome back to the Wildside News. And now, Sydney Wildsmith.
In early childhood song chants, this way and that way and this way and that way. Where are we headed? We seem to hear those words every day in the mainstream media. But an amazing PBS series is coming to a close. It's A Journey to Planet Earth, and it concludes this week and next. Which way are we going? We find out when we return here on the Wildside News. This week and next are the concluding programs of a wonderful series on PBS entitled Journey to Planet Earth. Today we talk with the producer of the show, Hal Wiener, about the conclusions he makes following such a comprehensive analysis of the state of our Earth. PBS is finishing up a series this week and next week that really has provided an extraordinary overview of planet Earth. It's referred to as Journey to Planet Earth, and we're talking to Hal Wiener, who is one of the co-producers of this show. Hal, welcome to the Wildside News.
Good to be here.
Now, you've done a whole series of amazing films. You and your wife, Marilyn, have done over 225 documentaries and some major films and have won outstanding awards at every level, including 29 Cine Golden Eagles. And what has brought you to this point of really focusing on planet Earth?
Well, we've been focusing on environmental issues now since 1992. That's when we were asked to do the opening film for the Earth Summit down in Rio.
Mm-hmm.
After we did that show, the Assistant Secretary General of the UN said, "You know what? What the world needs is a continuing series about the environment." We said, "Sure, why not?" But it took us a while to get it off the ground. But we've been doing Journey to Planet Earth since 1999. It's been an extraordinary journey.
How in the world did you decide? There were so many segments to this. Let me just review some for the listeners. River of Destiny, which really focused on rivers. The Urban Experience, Land of Plenty, Land of Want. On the Brink, which suggests the animals and species that are endangered. Seas of Grass, that deals with the grasslands, hot zones. And now we're talking about the state of the planet and future conditional, which is the culmination of this series. But how did you come up with these different categories?
A couple of reasons. We do an extraordinary amount of reading. We try to see what's available. We try to find out what people don't know but would like to learn more about in terms of the environment. We have advisors. And then we try to find out what really are the cutting-edge stories. And it's not the cutting-edge stories of today, but the cutting-edge stories of tomorrow. And we've been fortunate to really pick some stories that have legs, so to speak.
You've traveled literally all over the world to put this series together. And
about 42 countries.
40? Wow. That's extraordinary. Just generally speaking, mano a mano, human to human, after traveling that much around the world, what makes most note to you?
Well, you know, a couple of things. Generally speaking, we see great things around the world. We see cultures that are, many cultures that are thriving. We see communities that are thriving. And we see people in many parts of the world living longer and living better quality of life. But on the dark side, there are still billions of people without fresh water, billions of people suffering from health consequences because of environmental issues and problems. We see cultures that also are not thriving. We know that 90% of all the languages in the world are going to disappear. We know that cultures are disappearing, and we see globalization in a way that most people don't see, because we go to the most rural and desolate parts of the world, and we'll see a Nike swish and a swish, or we'll see cell phones, and we'll see TV, and we'll see ads for Pepsi-Cola and Coca-Cola, and that's an indication that this world is getting much, much smaller.
And, of course, what you just talked about is part of the challenge, because everybody wants the goods, you know? And the trouble is, the real question is, have we, as Lester Brown referred, have we outgrown planet Earth?
Well, there are some people that say that we have, and certainly I don't believe that. But we're certainly in a very, very perilous state. When 1.2 billion people in China and 1 billion people in India want to live the same lifestyles, and they should, as the people in the United States, the consequences are enormous. The price of oil will skyrocket. The competition for food will become keener, and prices will go up, and therefore those without, meaning right now probably most of sub-Saharan Africa, will suffer. These are very, very serious issues. But, you know, the one of the major issues is a lot of people have made the environment into a red state, blue state situation. Last night, one of our shows, State of the Planet, aired on most PBS stations. And it's so interesting. We get lots of emails. Mostly, you know, people saying they like the show and they'd like to use it in schools and we accommodate them. But it's interesting to see some of the hate mail. And I find that really extraordinary that people think that our position on the environment is a political issue. It's a left-wing issue. It's an anti-religious issue. And that's very disturbing.
We have to somehow just push around those and move on, because there's so many people doing great things on the planet who are aware of these problems and are working aggressively to address them. Let's talk about what the state of the planet is then, Hal.
Well, the state of the planet right now is in a very precarious situation. The big issues over the next 10 to 20 years will be water, food, and climate change. There's no question about that. Our climate is changing. There's going to be sea level rise. The amount of sea level rise, we do not know. The amount of climate change, we do not know, though we know there will be change. And in some parts of the world, it will be devastating. We do know that right now, 1 billion people go to sleep without the proper nourishment. 2 people do not have access to fresh water, clean water. These are harsh realities. And we also know that the government and industry is very slow to act on these problems. Unfortunately, when we elect people to office, we elect them for 6 years, 4 years, 2 years. And environmental problems are they last longer than that. And unfortunately, we need our public servants to think about what's going to happen 10, 20, 30 years from now. And I think those are big issues.
What would you recommend in terms of trying to help people understand? Well, you're doing that. Your series certainly has done that. I won't even ask that question. You're doing everything you possibly can in a very brilliant and forceful way to make people aware of this. You also, by the way, this particular segment, The State of the Planet, is airing this week, and the next week, which starts on the 18th, is Future Conditional.
Right.
Talk about that.
Well, Future Conditional is an interesting show. We highlight... There are three or four stories that we highlight. Number one, we do about 10 minutes in the Arctic, and what's interesting about the Arctic, which is the most pristine place in the world, there's really no cars up there, there's no industry up there, but it's also one of the most toxic places in the world. The chemicals that are released into the atmosphere in the lower latitudes make their way up into the Arctic. They get into the food chain. They get into the sea mammals and into the fish, and then the people up there who depend upon them for sustenance eat these animals, and it turns out that Inuit women's breast milk is 23% more toxic than those living in lower latitudes. It's a serious problem. So we do that story, and then we do a story about probably the most serious environmental catastrophe that's ever taken place, and that's the RLC. The RLC is shrinking, as we know, but as it shrinks, it releases toxic dust storms for a variety of reasons, and the people living around the RLC in Uzbekistan have some of the highest rates of tuberculosis, birth defects, kidney cancer, just a whole slew of, and poverty. But what we do then is connected to the Salton Sea, which is just outside of Palm Springs in California. And the same issue and the same problem is happening just outside of Palm Springs. And they're letting the Salton Sea dry up, which is a toxic dump for agricultural chemicals, and you're going to have toxic dust storms sweeping across Palm Springs. And nobody wants to step up to the plate because it's very expensive to solve these problems. And the reason why the Salton Sea is drying up is that the farmers there have sold approximately 10% of their water to the city of San Diego. There are huge water problems in California.
Extraordinary challenges ahead. You have actually, this is sort of like watching The Apprentice and knowing the answer. You know what the answers are. You've actually formulated these into your films. What sort of visions do you have for how we are going to deal with this, how we best deal with it, and what the future may look like for planet Earth?
Well, there are a couple of things. Number one, a more enlightened public makes for more enlightened voters. It makes for people that get involved in community activities. Small steps will solve big problems. So if we can get people to take get involved in local initiatives, one of the things we suggest is to go to our website, pbs.org, Journey to Planet Earth, and there are a lot of ways to get involved in local initiatives, and these are local educational initiatives. There is also a website called TriScience, TriScience.org, and there are wonderful environmental activities for families that get them out into the into their communities, and they can monitor air pollution, and they'll be able to ultimately monitor water pollution and a variety of other issues. As for the future of planet Earth, I'm very optimistic. I don't think there's a choice. I think we have to be optimistic, but with that becomes we need a sense of realism, and we have to understand that we cannot stop thinking and caring and doing something about the environment.
So the question becomes partly, how do we depoliticize this? How do we reconnect people and their environment in a way that leads to health and sustainability?
Well, that's a great question. Unfortunately, I don't know what the answer is. And this is not a Republican-Democrat issue. Under the last several administrations, we have not heard a major call for conservation. 40% of the oil used in the United States goes into the use of automobiles. And by simply improving gas efficiency in our automobiles, we can be well on the way of trying to cope with our dependence on foreign oil. What is the future? It's very hard to say, but we certainly have to let our congressmen, I think, know that we care about things. I don't believe in screaming and shouting. I just believe in letting people know and letting our congressmen, our senators, our local officials know that we really want to do something and we care about the environment. It's as simple as that.
Well, you know, the environment actually, it turned into the environmental movement, but it started out as a conservation movement, which was really not political. It was about the earth and about our forests and lands and things, and unfortunately it became politicized. We definitely, for America's sake and for the sake of the planet here, need to kind of leave the politics behind, because it is not about, as you say, it is not at all about politics. It's really about a better world, and this is something that we want and we need. You're doing so many wonderful things to do this. I certainly take my hat off to you. Now, of course, Matt Damon, the wonderful actor, is very much involved in this. How do you find his his passion for the earth expressed?
Well, you know, Matt is very serious about environmental issues, number one. Number two, he's a very good spokesperson because he's Harvard-educated and passionate about doing something about the earth. The other thing is, of course, he's a very good writer. You know, he's an Academy Award-winning screenwriter. So that when we work with Matt, it's not merely saying to him, please read the script and go on camera and say nice things. He's part of the entire collaboration. And I think he speaks well for, and he speaks well to young people. And this is really his main reason why he's involved in this initiative, is to get young people interested in environmental issues. And if you can get the next generation to really be enlightened and educated about the environment, I think then we will depoliticize the environmental issues at hand.
As you've heard him talk about this, do you feel that he is seeing that sort of a change in his generation and kids coming up?
It's too early to tell whether there's change or not. Unfortunately, young people don't vote. When I mean young people, I mean people that are old enough to vote, they're still not voting. And I think a lot has to be done. But, you know, we all do what we can. And certainly Matt Damon is out there really trying to lead the way.
Well, so are you, Hal. I've been talking with Hal Wiener, and also your collaborator is your wife, Marilyn.
Absolutely.
And tell what is her role in this? So just so I want to represent this fairly.
Number one, Marilyn conceived the idea for the series.
There you go.
And number two, she's the producer of the show, so I work for her.
Perfect. Well, listen, Hal, it's been a great pleasure talking with you. You're doing extraordinary work. Keep that up, and I certainly appreciate having your voice on the Voice of the Earth here on the Wild Side News.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Check your local listings for the Journey to Planet Earth series airing this week and next on PBS. When we return, we head on over to one of America's premier national parks, Yosemite, as our celebration of National Park Week ramps up here on Your Voice of the Earth, the Wild Side News.